In this episode, we discuss Repo Men. Twice the Repo Men of Repo Man, one billionth as good a movie. Everyone, and welcome to the Flop House. I'm Dan McCoy.
Flop House. Stuart Wellington. That's my new intro.
You forgot that you were supposed to say your name there.
And not just say,
whoa, who's talking? I don't know. It's
Flop House.
He's not been introduced.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
Oh,
the voice
God.
That sounds like this is Elliot Kalin.
Oh, good. So for new listeners, fix our voice sounds in your heads.
Flop House.
Flop House.
Flop House. Flop House.
It's like that scene when the weird guys in Dark Crystal all start moaning at the same pitch.
Yeah.
We were a lot like that, I think. Okay, so what's going on? What are we doing here?
Arms.
I kind of wish I did, though.
Yeah, there was a woman at Comic-Con with a really good Skeksis costume.
Okay.
That's pretty awesome. Was it like a hot Skeksis?
No.
I find that hard to believe. Usually when I think of a Skeksis costume, I
really?
Think of like a really hot
of
chick
the,
in a bikini.
Of the
bikini.
Wrinkly lizard rat birds.
Mm-hmm. Yep. With voluminous robes to cover their hideous bodies.
Yes.
At least it wasn't like a sexy Gelfling, because that would be like a prepubescent
That's like an
child.
ElfQuest
that's
comic.
That's redundant.
Yeah.
They are like... They're like the creepy drawings of a pedophile.
What do you think we're getting Elliot for his bachelor party?
A Gelfling stripper?
Yeah, Doy.
When
it's ruined now.
When I was a kid, I was...
Well, I think he won't be that surprised.
I was creeped out by the Gelflings because I thought they looked too much like Michael Jackson.
prescient.
Anywho. Anywho.
Anywho.
Anywho.
We should take this on the road, guys.
Oh, man.
The new singing group.
Yeah, the new singing group that just does one-note songs that have one word.
Inspired by the Three Stooges.
Yeah. Well, we can jam a lot of tracks into a set.
That's true. We could, and one CD could have about 100 tracks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to
like
talk about the movie this week,
album.
Do we? Because I know I don't.
No, we take a little vacation, and it did not refresh our batteries. It made us angrier that we had to watch a bad movie.
Well, I don't know about angrier, but I was in California for 2 weeks. It was very pleasant. Then I had to come back to this. So.
Mm-hmm. And I was sick and wasn't pleasant, and I'm regaining my strength, and I had to suffer through this.
Yeah.
And I was on a long sabbatical.
Yeah, from life?
From having fun.
Yeah.
Yep. Enough of that.
Like a suck-batical.
No. Man, you didn't lose it. You still got it, Elliot. I love that shit.
Professional comedy writer Elliot Kalin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me refresh our listeners if they've forgotten. What we do is the three of us, get together on an evening, usually during the week, because that's what fits best with you guys' schedule. We get a couple.
That's a little more information than they need.
Chill out, okay? We get a couple. Dan and I get some drinks. Elliot gets a shitload of Popeyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have our various
vices.
You know, yeah. We watch a movie that is available on either DirecTV, watch it now, or DVD or something.
I don't think the format really plays in.
I'm explaining it. I think it's important.
How big do you think the television is?
I don't know.
It's like a 32-inch?
It's pretty small.
32-inch? It's like a...
It's meager.
It's a 42-inch.
Really?
I think so.
I don't think you could afford a 42-inch, Dan.
All right.
So we watch a movie.
5.1 stereo sound.
That's true. The sound is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So we watch this movie. Usually it's a movie that is
with
been,
our eyes.
Yeah,
light bounces off the TV, is emitted from the TV screen and enters our retina.
There's rods and cones involved somehow.
Thanks, Merlin, for explaining it to me. So,
Merlin, the eye scientist. Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that what he taught him in Sword in the Stone?
Oh, maybe he did.
Yeah. So we watch a movie, usually one that Dan picks out and forces the other, you know, Elliot and me to watch.
At gunpoint.
Yeah, and he's like, I have to watch this movie. I've been waiting to watch it. So we watch this movie, and then we talk about it, which is what we're about to do. The movie this week.
Unless we can procrastinate a little bit longer.
What? The movie this week is Repo Man.
Repo Man.
Repo Man.
Repo Man. Okay, so
and it is crappy.
So when you see the title Repo Man, you usually think of what? Elliot, go.
The movie Repo Man.
Okay, Dan, go.
The movie Repo Man.
Stuart, go. Repo the Genetic Opera.
Oh, wow. Curveball.
Well,
that's strange. But don't worry about it. Let's go.
This movie combines elements from all of those except for Repo Man.
Okay.
It is the story of Jude Law, a genetic repo guy, the actor,
genetic
character. Now, this is the future where for some reason Toronto seems to be part of America. There was a war of some kind. Now Jude Law is a veteran whose job is to retrieve organ machines, like kind of scientifically designed organs that people have bought to replace their malfunctioning organs and now cannot pay the price for. They can't keep up their payments.
Mm-hmm.
So they send out the
repo men.
Yeah,
you get on some kind of like a contract plan.
Yes. So they send out the repo men when you're behind payment to cut open your belly and take the organs back.
These are predatory lenders, is what you're saying.
They are the predatoriest of lenders.
It's similar to if you get a cell phone contract and you fail to pay, and then some dude cuts your ears off.
Oh, wow.
What cell phone company does that?
I think it's Verizon.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
Telecommentary.
Jude Law seems mostly untroubled by this work that he does. His wife hates it. But he and his partner, Forrest Whitaker, who were also veterans from the same war together and were friends as kids.
Yeah, it seems like one or the other would have done, like, for the screenwriter.
Apparently they both enlisted. Apparently it was like a Civil War enlistment or World War I enlistment where you could all go in a group and they'd put a whole unit together from the same town.
They spent all their money on special effects. They couldn't spend their money on additional characters in the story.
Okay. Yes. The two of them are partners. They're repo men. Forrest Whitaker is a little too overeager, likes cutting people's bellies open. But Jude Law, while getting a repo, what exactly happened to him? I don't even remember anymore.
I don't know.
The defibrillator malfunctioned, and his own heart got zapped.
He got blown up. He had to get a new replacement heart. Now he owes money to the company. His life is falling apart. His wife has kicked him out of the house.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And he decides that it's time to take action.
Now,
this involves hanging out in broken down buildings for about 40 hours.
But it also involves falling in love with a girl who has like 80 organs that have been replaced.
You would think that when they tried to give her a credit check, they would find out that she is unable to pay for the organs she already has.
Well, that's the thing. They don't really do much of a credit check because they figure they can cut up those organ default payments and give them to and sell them as investments to pension plans and things like that. Mm-hmm. Then if those things are defaulted, the government will swoop in and pay for them.
What I think is interesting. They also point out that like there's a number of characters throughout the movie, not to skip ahead, that have like black market organs. Under what right does this other company, how can they swoop in and just cut out black market organs? That doesn't make sense to me.
It might be that it's their property that's been taken from them.
Okay.
I think that's
and
part
like,
of it.
And like jailbroken or whatever when you, I don't know. You know, that's to jailbreak something when you like, if somebody has an iPhone. Okay.
You're saying you want to run third-party apps on your heart?
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to do that.
You wanted like to jack it up like the Heart and Crank 2, for instance.
Yes, precisely.
So anyway, he's on the run with this girl. They have a series of stupid plans that don't help them. Forrest Whitaker is sent by their boss, Liev Schreiber, to go track Jude Law down and get his heart back. And in the end, they go to the main building where the headquarters of the company is, and they kill like a bazillion people, mm-hmm. and then blow it up. And then Jude Law is on a sunny beach with his girl. He's a famous author now. His friend is there with him. It looks like he's perfectly content and everything worked out, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it seems like.
Uh-oh. Then they stole the end from Brazil. And it turns out a fake reality is being fed into his brain while he's in a comatose state. And in reality, everything's bad.
In a fight earlier in the film, his brain got damaged. And so...
He's Dane Bramaged.
Yeah. Forced... Well, Poe Buddy's nerfing, though. But Forrest Whitaker put this, like,
all I'm saying is, he's not as think as you drunk he is.
He's with Stupid, who is himself. But, yeah, no, Forrest Whitaker.
What are you guys talking about?
Haven't you ever been to a county fair? Come on.
What?
Forrest, you know, where they sell t-shirts.
Forrest Whitaker takes pity on him in the only way he can and puts him into a beautiful dream. And his girl, I guess, gets killed off screen.
They're just going to take her organs back out. Yeah.
Which is exactly, again, like Brazil.
Yes.
It's just they do a great job of kind of like bringing you back down to reality.
Oh, yeah.
Spoilers for Brazil, by the way.
Because, like, I mean, we're just always being, we're always being fed these Hollywood endings where everything works out right in the end. But this movie kind of tells us the real way things are in this world.
Except the
with
real,
fake organs.
The Hollywood ending now is the, like, surprise, things are bad.
Okay.
Ending. Like, that's become such a cliche. Like, when Brazil did it, I'm sure it was, you know, frightening.
Like in, like in Carrie, where the hand bursts out of the dirt, and you're like, "Whoa!"
Well, that is a dream.
It's earlier than Brazil,
or Jurassic Park.
I don't think there is a twist ending in Jurassic
Park. I thought there was dinosaurs.
It just ends
still.
With them flying off the flying.
It's like
from the
dinosaurs
island.
Hanging out, like still alive.
They are, but cards. They're not. There's not. That's not a twist. That's they've escaped.
Oh, I thought they thought they killed all the dinosaurs.
No.
Helicopter out of there.
Yeah. Maybe I was
they
thinking
leave
of the movie.
Dinosaurs behind.
Is that the movie Carnosaur?
Of Carnosaur, where okay. They kill the dinosaurs and they go, "Yeah, we did it." And then the government troops bust in and kill all the heroes because no one can know about it.
I thought
or
that
like
was Return of the Living Dead.
Return of the Living Dead is similar, where
wow, we were just spoiling everything.
The army.
But
decides,
are there dinosaurs in that?
I wish it was Return of the Living Dead dinosaurs. That'd be awesome. I'd love to see a zombie dinosaur movie.
That
I guess the closest
great.
Thing to that is Night at the Museum.
There's a zombie dinosaur in that?
There's a dinosaur skeleton that's running around trying to eat
somebody.
Is
there a cowboy riding on that?
There should be if there isn't.
A zombie cowboy or a regular,
no, regular
cowboy?
Regular cowboy.
Okay. And can he control dust devils and to swarm his enemies?
I don't think so.
Oh, that's too bad.
I don't think any cowboy could ever do that.
Like an aeromancer? We'll talk about it later.
Okay. I do think that... I don't know. I was still a little surprised that the ending of this movie turned out to be so bleak, since the rest of it seemed to be so, like, incredibly dumb.
Well, that's the thing. The movie alternated between really hyper-stupid, like, which I mean not hyper-stupid, like, so stupid, but, like, hyper-active and, like, very fast mm-hmm. and kind of fun but stupid. It alternated between that and super grim and super serious and dark and, you know, gritty. In a way that was very not good.
Well, that was the thing. Like for like the first 15 minutes, you're set up to think that this is going to be like a satire, like a dark comedy action film. And then as soon
as Jude Law gets a
conscience, it starts taking the concept seriously. And the concept is ridiculous on its face.
That from like, the well, just from the beginning, like how did this company get permission to run this business?
That's a good question.
Why? And also, I kept wondering during the movie, and I kept saying, how do this many people need mechanical organs?
Yeah, because, like, at one when Jude Law gets his fake heart put in, it starts, like, basically malfunctioning right away. Like, why would people get these mechanical organs if they don't make them, like, super powered? That would explain it at least a little bit.
Yeah, and the organ transplants are... Maybe there was a line of dialogue somewhere that explained, like, why everyone needed new organs all of a sudden. But, like, organ transplants are not that common a thing. There are a lot of them, and there are not enough organs to go around. But, like, they have a scanner gun that they can point at someone, and it tells them if they have a fake organ in them. And they're driving down the street, and it seems like everybody has one.
Well, that was what was ridiculous to me, not the fact that there were many...
And no one can pay for them.
...organs. It was that the way these repo men work is that they don't get, like, a particular commission. Like, Jimbo Jones is... He needs...
Jimbo Jones?
Yeah,
from The Simpsons?
You just make that up?
I'll just make up a name on the top of my head. Clark Kent has...
Yeah, but say...
Just make
right.
up a name. Let's say a guy named George Washington.
Yeah, has, whatever. All right. Say a guy named...
Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln.
Jesus Christo. Let's say that...
has an organ.
It's a little too ethnic for me.
Abraham Lincoln is deadbeat on his payments.
Which, at certain times in his life, could have been possible. He was born into poverty,
Yeah.
You know, he kind of made it as a lawyer, but only after failing as a storekeeper.
Yeah, he didn't make enough money splitting rails. And so,
you make almost no money splitting rails.
Most of the time, you can get more money for a rail that hasn't been split.
Well, you got to pay the rail company for ruining all their merchandise.
But the point is, he can't pay.
And all that money went to doing rails right up his nose.
Right. And so they specifically send out Repo Man.
And what a nose.
Huge nose. It's a lot of coke he needs to fill up that schnoz.
But there's a specific guy that they're after, so the Repo Men are sent out to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue to get back.
Just
the
to name
organ.
An address off the top of my head.
But that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, they're just, like, cruising around with their, like, repo gun, and they're like, okay, let's scan these people. All right, that guy doesn't have an organ. Oh, that guy has an organ. We got.
And they
get
have
him.
License to, at will, stop anyone and zap them with an electric dart gun and cut their bellies open. And leave them to die, basically.
More than anything, this future, the greatest, like, technological advancement is the advancement in scanning technology.
Yes, it can scan through thick flesh of human beings.
Yeah, which is uncommon. Uncommon nowadays for a scanner to work even when it's pressed up against the barcode,
yes.
Let alone.
And yet, cars, phones, everything else is almost exactly the same.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. These repo guys, they could get more money just like patenting that scanning technology and selling it than like to go to the organ.
And I mean, now granted, we've talked a little bit about this vision of the future that we're presented.
Yes.
This
and
dystopian
of course,
vision.
It's a unique vision of the future where almost everything is Asian influenced.
Big screens on buildings.
It's raining a lot. Never seen that before.
A bunch of blimps flying around.
Slightly different clothing styles, but not enough so that you're actually like, oh, that looks weird. You're like, oh, that kind of looks cool. There's a lot. Yeah, blimps. There's a lot of like fancy 3D and stuff.
Yeah, what you're saying is it's basically Blade Runner.
Yeah, it's Blade Runner. Or Back to the Future Part 2.
Yeah.
With hoverboards.
Except there's no hoverboards in this.
You're saying that they went down to the store and they took a few, like, oh, I'll take a little Blade Runner, I'll take a little Brazil.
A little Matrix, a little bit of Minority Report. I'm going to steal a scene from Old Boy.
Poorly and, like, forget what made that scene interesting.
Yeah, really poorly steal it, but it does feel like it's a mishmash of design choices that were made in other movies.
Yeah.
And there are a few parts where things look a little bit different, and it's kind of neat. Like, there's when they break into the headquarters of the organ company, which I don't remember the name of. The Union, that's right. Which doesn't make sense as a name.
Stupid.
It's because when you hear the Union, you don't think, ah, that's the name of a company. You think, oh, they're referring to the union they belong to, which they're not.
Well, it's a coded political message.
Against unions? Really? Okay. It's weird.
Strike breakers. They are.
They go into the headquarters and they find the room where the people are actually making the organs. And it's this huge white room of people in kind of the suits you make when you wear when you're making computer chips. You know, like covers full body, blinding white hazmat suits. They're all sitting at individual tables, just kind of making little movements with screws and things on these artificial organs. And it looks kind of
organ grinders, they're called.
They're grinding organs, yeah. There's little monkeys everywhere with cups of coins.
Wow. That seems like that would not be sanitary.
Well, the monkeys are shaved.
Okay. Fair enough.
But that scene, that setup looks kind of neat.
Yeah.
But then they don't do anything with it, and they just kind of throw it away.
I think I was reading Entertainment Weekly during that scene.
I think you were complaining about the Green Lantern movie at that point.
Yeah, it looks really stupid. So, something else about Repo Men. Dan, what did you think about the choice to have Jude Law as our star? Too much charisma?
Well,
too much scene chewing?
Yeah, his box office streak continues unabated, and the streak I'm talking about is the streak of bombs.
Is the losing streak. Yeah. What other bombs has he had recently?
He hasn't been given much chance to do. Like, he was in Alfie, of course, and
hilarious
Sleuth remake
that
did
didn't
not do
well.
Ouch.
What else? I can't even.
It's a remake
think.
Of a not very
what's
good
that,
movie.
What's that movie where Cameron Diaz goes to England and Kate Winslet goes
the
to
Holiday.
America? Yeah, he was in that thing.
Did that do well? I thought it did.
Probably did okay, but I think it was like the least successful.
He was
of
in he
that,
was in Sherlock Holmes.
Oh,
he, and I thought he was good in Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, he was good in Sherlock Holmes.
He was in AI.
But that was years ago. That's a 10-year-old movie.
I think the man.
You're right about that.
I think the man is not bad as a. As a supporting actor.
Well, he's
a robot?
He is good when he's a character that you are not supposed to identify with or necessarily even like. Like, Talented Mr. Ripley, he's great in playing an asshole.
Well, but, I mean, are we supposed to like him here? Like
because he has a change of heart and realizes what he did is wrong, and we're supposed to want him to take down the system or some crap.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the problem with this movie is they don't understand that the viewer does not identify with this guy at all.
Yeah,
like I'm gonna refer to another crappy science fiction.
Cold Stone Creamery told you to go out and kill people.
We're not supposed to talk about the place I work, Dan.
I'm sorry. So, you get stalkers?
No, I'm thinking about problems with my place of work. Right. So
we talk about where I work all the time.
I'd rather not talk about the
Pier 1 Imports
guys. Okay. So. What I was going to say, though...
So at Shady O'Rack... anyway, you're saying...
What I was... to compare it to, say, the movie Equilibrium, which is a totally stupid, silly, futuristic movie...
Based on a premise that makes no sense.
Yes, makes no sense at all. On some level, at least you can identify with Christian Bale's character, because he's a guy who is, like, slowly discovering the world.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a sociopathic killer who's like, I'm a total asshole, wait a minute... The people I'm hurting are just like me. Like, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
No person who's like that will have a change of heart. I can't really identify.
It's similar to John Travolta's character in From Paris with Love, in that we're supposed to be charmed and fall for a character who is a jerk who kills people for no reason, it seems. And we can never really tell. Whether we're supposed to like him or whether we're supposed to even trust what he's saying, you know, like it's they both movies have set up a character who we're supposed to like them, I guess, because they kill people without in like cool ways, but really they don't give us anything to glom onto, so we're left with just a guy running around doing crazy things that we don't approve of.
So Elliot, you're saying we should like people who kill people in boring ways. I think that was what you're...
I don't think that's the subtext. But I'm saying, that, like, when you see... If you see a movie... There are movies about killers where the audience identifies with the killer because the killer... There's a certain style about the movie or about the character or something that makes him charismatic to them.
Like The Professional.
Yeah, exactly. Like a lot of Hitman movies.
Like the movie Hitman.
Or like Gross Point Blank or something like that. Yeah, or like the movie Hitman. Like where... You're supposed to like the character despite his doing these things, or because he can get away with things that the audience can't get away with but has fantasized about doing, whereas here we're not given those ropes to cut to hold on to, you know? We're given an unlikable guy doing unlikable things.
But I always wanted to electrocute a guy until they passed out and then cut their organs out.
I don't know if you should say that on a recording.
Oops.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
This has been an elaborate FBI sting, Stuart.
I'm busted.
Swarm. Take him out.
Swarm? Wait, that's a code word?
Yeah, swarm means stay back. Don't do anything yet.
Okay, cool.
And take him out means we're going to need more time.
So, this movie appealed to me, Stuart, because it featured one of the members of the Wu-Tang Clan of rappers, the RZA.
Mm-hmm.
Elliot.
Yeah, what?
Not to be confused.
What's going on with you?
The Jizza.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to say or what you want from me at this
moment.
No,
I don't know. I was just changing up the conversation.
Well, RZA was the most likable character in the entire movie.
That's true.
And the most charismatic performer in the entire movie. Although I have to admit, Forrest Whitaker had his moments.
Yep. Although I never quite understood why Forrest Whitaker didn't get a replacement eye for his one lazy eye. In a world of replacement, he can't afford it. Interesting.
He doesn't want to be repoed.
That's true. Although I'd imagine you'd get some kind of corporate discount.
But apparently not enough because Jude Law can't keep up with the payments on his heart.
I don't think it was the issue of payments that made him not want to keep up with it. I think it was on the principle, right?
Mm.
You know, I'm gonna go out on a limb with your thing about likability and like killing people, and say that part of the problem with this movie is actually the fact that Jude Law did find a conscience. Because I found Elliot's doing a comical thing with his glasses.
I was just rearranging my glasses while you're talking.
I found Liev Schreiber more maybe not like I would like to hang out with him in life, but more likable and enjoyable in this film because he had no conscience.
But Liev Schreiber had no conscience, but he also had panache.
Yeah.
The way he said things was funny. Like, he had a personality and a style.
He seemed to be enjoying himself in the movie.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. You can watch
him. Unlike the other actors.
And, yeah, that's true, unlike anybody. Well, I think he was just like, this'll pay for my time on Broadway. Oh, this is great.
This'll pay for my time on Wolverine X-Men Origins Part 2.
Well, I assume they would pay him for that.
Oh, no, that's a labor of love. It's a small budget role. A tiny little movie like that?
It's a tiny movie that's actually about Sabretooth. Sabretooth is broken down. He's old. He's doing fights in small towns.
You don't realize
towns.
That Liev Schreiber...
He's got to reconnect with his daughter.
Liev Schreiber personally funded all of X-Men Origins Wolverine.
I didn't realize that.
That's the thing.
It's very
because the studios weren't interested.
He saved up all his Broadway money.
Who's this Wolverine character?
Claus
how would America... What would America think about
this
guy?
Who's this that we're going to put in a movie?
I've never heard of him.
Liev Schreiber is, but he's the villain of the movie.
Yeah.
So it's like you can like him because he's a villain with style. You know that you're not supposed to approve of him even if you like the personality. Yeah.
The man even dies with style.
Yeah, he has one of the best deaths in the movie. But Jude Law, you're supposed to sympathize with in some way.
Mm-hmm. And I don't.
You know, same thing like with Silence of the Lambs. Like people like the Hannibal Lecter character because he's got charisma and he's. Oh, it's open that he's a monster. You're not supposed to think of him as a hero.
You know what, guys?
Andy doesn't have any crazy sexual hang-ups.
I don't know where that came from.
I don't know. That's where people draw the line with the serial killer. Is like they think a serial killer's cool when he's like kind of like smart and clever. But things start getting weird sexually.
Buffalo Bill tucking his penis between his legs is not okay.
Yeah,
but Hannibal Lecter eating people is okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
I think that's a good point.
You know what, guys? I think I'm going to cut this shorter than usual.
Okay.
Because
we've got so much to
say. I know. I mean, this movie has totally captured the heart of
the thing.
I mean, what we're all about.
We don't have a lot to say, but also, in lieu of talking about recommendations, I would like to get a live report. Or not a live report. Much later.
I'm alive.
About the San Diego Comic-Con from Elliot.
You mean San Diego Comic-Con International?
Yeah. So in order to give more time to that segment, I think we're going to wrap it up and give our final judgments on this.
Okay.
Was this a good
I was hoping
movie?
For a little more debate.
A bad, bad movie? Or a movie that you actually kind of liked? Stuart?
I think I'm going to go with bad, bad movie on this one. Mainly... More than anything, just because of the length. Like,
yeah, it was also very
if
long.
It wasn't so long, I might have at least been able to, you know, pay like reading Entertainment Weekly until there was a couple people getting shot and then enjoyed. No, that wasn't even good. They even use CGI for all the blood, which is really terrible.
Yeah.
Altogether, not a very good movie.
Well, Stuart, you know, corn syrup don't come cheap.
I know, that's the thing.
You're right, it's much more expensive than computers.
Much more expensive to have like to have somebody squirt blood off screen than to have some guy animate blood properly, which they didn't in this movie.
No,
obviously,
it looked very fake and bad. And they edited into scenes they didn't need it. There's one part a person gets hit in the face with the gun butt, and they animated like drops of blood flying out of the general area of their nose. Totally unnecessary. I didn't need to see blood in that scene.
Yeah.
It's not like there's.
I was hoping for blood. That's
but it's not like if there wasn't blood, fetishes. You'd be like, well, that's not realistic.
Like, this scene isn't visceral enough for me.
Are we to believe we live in some sort of universe where no one has any blood?
What is this, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode? So bad, bad movie from Stuart Daniel.
Yeah, bad, bad movie. I said this as we were watching it. The first 15 minutes, I thought, oh, you know. Maybe I'll actually enjoy this movie because it moved along at a good clip. It had jokes. I mean, not great jokes, but it was like, okay, this movie knows what it is. It's a black comedy about people who take organs out of people's bodies, and that's not a bad premise for a movie necessarily. But it forgot that it was an exploitation movie. It got really grim, and people just like sort of stood around for long periods of time, and then it got violent again at the end, but that was too little too late, friends. Yeah.
It was like a less fun version of Babylon A.D., the lost Flophouse movie.
Oh, you guys wish. If you thought this was an unfunny episode of the Flophouse, Flophouse listeners, you should have heard our Babylon A.D. episode. We thought that was the worst movie we had seen. Nope. I still think Whiteout is worse, though.
I missed that one.
I'd rather watch Repo Man than Whiteout.
Okay.
And I say bad movie for the above reasons. Too long, too boring, badly made, too somber.
So,
music. How was the music?
No.
The music is a collection of pop standards. So it was actually, the soundtrack is fine.
Yep. Except for every single time a fight scene came on, somebody went to their tape deck and got, like, stock action scene music, like fight scene music.
It would be, like, pretty good standard pop jazz or something like that. And then, yeah, like, dun 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 dun.
Now we're gonna have to pay royalties to the Repo Man.
Repo Man.
Yeah. Repo Man.
Yeah, we got
Repo Man. You mean the Circle Jerks?
We're gonna have to pay royalties to Black Flag because.
What, Jonathan Richman?
Yeah. Anyway.
The Modern Lovers.
This is the...
It's Jonathan Richman and the Danny Glovers.
Oh, no. Interesting.
Yeah.
This is the portion of the show where...
I thought he was too old for that shit.
Well, he's still 3 days from retirement.
This is the portion of the show where
I let me
try and say something.
Let me say one thing off of Danny Glover being too old for this shit. I was in San Francisco recently, and I was ironing a pair of pants while my fiance went and did something else.
Oh, this story's going to be great.
And I turned on the TV, because you want to watch TV while you're ironing pants.
Sure.
And Lethal Weapon 2 was on. I think it was 2. It's whichever one has Danny Glover is sitting on the toilet, and there's a bomb mm-hmm. strapped to the toilet, too. And so Mel Gibson goes in the house because he thinks there's danger. Puts his gun around the corner. Oh, it's just Danny Glover on the toilet. Then it turns out there's a bomb on the toilet, and Danny Glover's embarrassed because the bomb squad has to come. And I remember while watching it, I was like, wow, this is amazing that this was in a movie. There was a time when this was an acceptable scene for a blockbuster film. Is this ridiculous that, like, the joke is he's sitting on the toilet, you know, and then there's a bomb there. Ugh. Movies have gotten both better and worse.
That would never happen in today's world of old dogs.
But Old Dogs is a children's comedy. This was an R-rated action film.
A sequel to, you know, a pretty major action movie.
This is the sequel, a sequel to a huge hit that people still kind of like.
All right. The key phrase there would be R-rated, since, I don't know, I think you've forgotten a little film called Transformers, where... you know, like robots are peeing oil on people.
Yeah,
and
but that's
dogs
different.
Are humping things.
There's some, that's like that's a louder type of joke. This was just done in a very like matter of fact way. Here's the joke we do about the guy on the toilet.
Transformers, is Danny Glover in that?
Okay. Anyway, this is the part of the show where we talk about
he played
letters.
Mr. Transformer.
Letters
in
okay,
Grand Canyon. Pure luck.
Silverado?
This first one is...
pure luck.
It's called Response to the Response of My Email.
Wow.
Never mind.
Is this a dialogue that we've opened?
Well, this is from Martin Biro. You may have remembered him.
Oh, of the Pens and Trains fortune.
Yeah. And he left the note for the secretary... Elizabeth
yes.
Yeah, and then she wrote in and back. She was unimpressed by our
looks. Cosplaying shit, right?
Well, and he responds...
I don't remember that part.
Into, like, Twilight and cosplay,
He responds saying, rest assured, we are not in some Flophouse-inspired inter-office war, but you can imagine we are if you wish.
I do wish.
Already.
But he says, just for the record, or perhaps off the record, I would not kick any of you out of bed, and I would write /fiction to that effect upon request.
Please don't.
Please do not. But we appreciate this. And this suggests...
I'm up for it.
This suggests a whole new direction for us, guys, and that's we can become gay icons. You know, we have struck out with our female listener.
I don't know about you, Elliot. It sounds so hateful when it comes from Dan's mouth.
Okay.
You know?
He is a homophobe. Yeah. I mean,
he's gay men.
He's literally spitting the words out with disgust. Yeah.
I know. It kind of makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, me too.
Continue, Dan.
They're called Gycons, by the way.
No, that was all I wanted to say from that.
Isn't that that like little lizard on TV?
Yeah, he's gay.
Okay, continue.
Okay, well, this is another message, and this is from Life.
Was that all that he had to say?
Well, yeah, that was the gist of it.
I mean, I'm sure he has more to say, but that's all he wrote.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Blythe says, I've recently discovered the treasure that is your podcast, but skimming through the archives of your show, I was unable to find the movie Troll 2. If you've not heard of this movie, I think the Flophouse can make an episode out of an early 90s.
We've heard of Troll 2.
And
you
I
say that
this
with
movie
such vitriol.
Being on par with, if not surprising, the good badness of Bratz. Yes. Well, no, we should address this. This will play into the next letter as well.
Okay.
What?
As we've said before, you know, the Flophouse focuses on new movies. However, the contest that we have going on right now.
Yes.
To reiterate, if you go to iTunes.
I think we should name the contest You Pick the Flop.
Yeah, You Pick the Flop. If you go to iTunes.
You Flop the Flop.
You write a review of the Flophouse.
It works for me. I like it.
You write a review of the Flophouse. Good or bad, we're not bribing you. Just go to iTunes and write a review, and we will randomly select one who will be able to tell us to watch a particular movie.
You get to make the call. You select the movie. Any movie.
It's like,
any movie.
It's like,
any movie
like one of them choose your own adventure books.
Choose your own flop venture.
Except you don't get to stick your finger in between in the page and then go to check out your various choices and
see
which choice you make.
Or not.
It's like real life.
Yeah.
Well, you don't get to see ahead.
You don't get to see ahead.
You just make your choice and that's it, man.
You don't know if you're going to get devoured by dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Continue,
I assume those are sour dinosaurs.
No, they're the same thing.
Now, before I had said that the deadline for this would be August 1st, but that podcast actually got a little delayed because of the 4th of July holiday.
Oh.
And so I'm just going to say...
Very patriotic.
If you review the Flophouse before the next episode comes out, you will
after
still
this
be considered. Yes.
Okay.
No, I'm not expecting them
to they're not gonna like
psychically know that I've said this.
I don't know.
All right. But so that's a side note. But of course, yes, Troll 2, a movie that has gotten a lot of attention. There's a documentary out about it.
Yes.
Best worst movie that's just come out.
And it is a very enjoyable bad movie.
It is an extremely enjoyable bad movie. And I find that it was a movie that like the cult arose totally organically. Like I showed it at a bad movie night before I knew that there were anyone. Any other people out there who are also like discovering this movie?
Check out this guy over here.
Yeah, no, he started the whole thing.
Yeah, what the hell?
I watched Troll 2 before it was cool to watch Troll 2.
Say that. Just pointing out.
Oh, Troll 2? Yeah, I watched that a while back. I'm done with that.
I'm a trolley.
I don't think it's a manufactured cult, but
no,
yeah.
No, in a way that there's something very pure about that because it's not like Snakes on a Plane or something where it's, you know.
Where it seems like somebody in an energy drink company came up with the idea that Snakes on a Plane would be super hilarious.
Or like Icing Bros, you know, which sounds like it came from a marketing meeting.
No. It's just a movie that played on HBO a lot when people were kids.
A lot.
And and then they grew up and then they're like, wait a minute, what the fuck was going on with that movie?
Yeah.
But
it's completely overshadowed Troll at this point.
Yeah. Starring Bono.
And
Sonny Bono.
And both of them have overshadowed Don Bluth's A Troll in Central Park.
Also, A Gnome Named Norm has been overshadowed.
Yeah. And the park,
just by life.
And The Park Is Mine, another Central Park movie.
And Munchies.
So
and Critters.
This kind of
Ghoulies.
Segues into the next email, which is from Peter, last name withheld. And it says, hey, you guys, I've been watching a lot of bad movies lately. In fact, I can't remember the last movie that got any other review.
I can't either.
God,
except for maybe
man.
One Dan kind of liked a while back. Where are the good bad movies? Where are the ones I might actually want to rent and get a good laugh out of?
Oh, fuck, I wish we found one.
Me too. I wish to God we could find one.
I've listened to all the podcasts, many of them twice, and a couple of them four or five times.
Holy shit.
Wow.
And while
probably I Know Who Killed Me. That one's hilarious.
That's a good one, yeah.
And while it's fun to hear you guys rip these movies new assholes, it would be a richer experience if I wanted to rent the movie
new asshole.
You watch so my friends and I can play the home version of the game.
Ah, yeah.
So,
we should try to find one that seems like... every time we pick a movie, we hope it's going to be a good, bad movie.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Like, we are hamstrung by what we've set out, which is to keep it relatively current. If we were pulling from the vast ocean of bad movies out there, there would be good, bad movies.
Oh, tons of them.
And that's the reason I actually, host, like, bad movie nights that aren't related to the Flophouse, where, like,
Dan basically doesn't watch any movies that aren't bad.
Yeah. And I went back and I looked at all my invitations for those bad movie nights, and I pulled a list of some of the more popular ones among the crowd.
That's a good idea.
So, so here's a list of movies that I would recommend as good bad movies. Paparazzi.
Mm-hmm.
That movie's awesome.
Sheena.
That's a fun, stupid movie.
Dreamcatcher.
Fuck that movie.
Don't Tell Her It's Me, a.k.a. The Boyfriend's
School. Yeah, that movie's
hilarious.
Awesome.
Terrible.
Cobra.
Sure.
Great. That's a good movie, though.
Cups.
The Garbage Pail Kids movie.
Oh, no. That's an unpleasant film. That is not a pleasant movie to sit through.
Two well-known bad movies, The Wicker Man remake and Xanadu, both went over very well.
Yeah, Wicker Man remake is
really
funny.
Yeah, it's so many punching of women.
Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Yeah, that movie's awesome.
Any other Andy Sidaris film.
Like Savage Beach.
Yeah, have a lot of bazookas
not
and
Amy
breasts.
Sidaris.
No, not Amy
Same
Sidaris.
Same thing, right?
No.
Superman 4.
Not what's his name,
Sidoukas. The Quest for Peace.
Superman 4 is pretty funny.
Yeah, that's and, really awesome. And Sleepwalkers. Those are all... Mm-hmm. Those were all popular choices. Do you guys have anything off
didn't
the top
you,
of your
head? Didn't you watch The Marine for one of your movie nights?
Oh, The
nights?
Marine. That was a good one, too.
Oh, God, that one's awesome.
I mean, we watched it, but The Happening I will always recommend as one of the funniest bad movies. Everything about it is bad, but it breezes by, and it's so stupid that it's just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
I'll agree with that.
And, of course, we all love... Tango and Cash.
Oh, and Tango of Cash is
so good.
Well, Tango of Cash is brilliant. Tango and Cash is a movie that's so bad it becomes a great movie.
I would agree with that.
It is
it's really good.
Tango and Cash is like the last great movie before irony stepped in, and people realized the movies they were making were bad.
Yeah.
And that they could like mitigate that by knowing it was bad. That was back when. Everyone thought it was either going to be the most kick-ass movie ever, or they knew it was bad and they were just trying to get through it as quickly as possible while making it.
Oh, God, it's so good.
It's such a bad movie, and it's so funny even before, for no reason at all, the retarded genius inventor comes in and makes them a battle tank.
Oh, yeah.
By Michael J. Pollan.
Oh, what a movie.
Yeah.
Featuring Terry Hatcher as the stripper who doesn't take her clothes off.
Yeah, a common figure in movies of the late 80s
That's
and early
true,
90s.
Yeah.
And in my masturbatory fantasies.
Wow, you are a gentleman even in those.
I like to treat my ladies well.
In your mind.
I like to give them a treasure bath.
Doesn't sound uncomfortable.
It's like gold coins and diamonds and shit.
Yeah, yeah, no,
it's
I
like
know.
Uncle Scrooge.
It's Uncle Scrooge.
Well, I wouldn't do it to Uncle Scrooge because he's a fucking duck man, but like, you know, like a hot chick.
You're not attractive.
Wearing like a shoulder pad sport coat.
Sounds like it'd be
she gets
exfoliating.
Treasure. Yeah, no, it feels good.
Sounds like you get rust all over you.
Come on. It's treasure.
When's the last time
I
you
clean
saw
that
rust
shit pretty well?
On treasure, come
you
on.
See corroded.
Tarnish.
It might be like there
oh,
might
wait,
be
tarnish.
Like
oh,
it might
tarnish.
Be a little bit of verdigris.
Mm-hmm.
What about ambergris?
Probably not. That would be in a separate type of bath.
All right,
the one that keeps me young.
The last email here is titled "Get Smurfed."
Oh boy, I think I know what this is going to be about.
And it comes from my favorite flop fan, Ashley, last name.
Wait, there are all speaking of movies that are good, bad movies, there are all these movies we wanted to watch that we haven't watched.
Like what?
Like Old Dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Where's that one?
All right, well, we'll get old.
There are all these movies that come out, and I say,
I thought we watched that.
I want to flophouse that. Or, like, friends of mine will say, oh, I saw this trailer in the first, like, this new M. Night Shyamalan movie, Devil.
Right.
Someone said to me, the first thing I thought when I saw that was, I can't wait to hear the flophouse do something about it. We got to do something about those movies.
Well, that movie has not been released yet.
No, but so. I mean, those we see movies, we see trailers all the
time. Why don't
we
call up M. Night, see if he'll send us an advanced screener?
All right, well, yeah. You guys start writing him down. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I'll That's email him.
Pull your weight.
I come here once every 2 weeks and talk for an hour. What, right. That's not pulling my weight?
So Ashley writes, I had the misfortune of seeing the trailer for the Smurfs movie in front of Toy Story 3. My first thought was, did Elliot write this? It's so hacktastic it defies parody.
Oh, and I'm a hack, huh?
If Smurfs can get made, I don't see how Ziggy starring Wallace Shawn can't get made.
Oh, I forgot about Ziggy. Yeah, you're right. Smurfs, if Smurfs is a success, I'm going out. I'm got to go to Tom Wilson and give him that Ziggy pitch. Or I'll buy the rights to Ziggy myself. I'll produce this movie.
It can't be that expensive.
It can be fairly expensive.
Well, I mean, like...
But you do have, like, mountains of
oh, no,
gold.
I work in television, so I make an annual salary of about $30 billion a year.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the thing about the Smurfs movie is it does all the stupid things that Ziggy would do in my Ziggy movie, where it's like, for no reason at all, it's like, now they're in the real world, and they play Wild Thing on the soundtrack.
Yeah, like, they play Wild Thing at the end, and Get Smurfed is... Get Smurf apostrophe D.
Just like this summer, Get Zigged.
Yeah,
they stole my idea. Awesome. That's what it was.
Yeah,
it is very hacktastic.
Is it like Beastmaster 2 through the Portal of Time, or like the He-Man movie where He-Man and the other Masters of the Universe show up in the real world?
Yeah, well, that's because Masters of the Universe was a Jack Kirby's fourth world.
Yeah, you have to assume that like Gargamel like does some sort of spell.
That sounds like Gargamel.
To you know, like Manhattan.
I haven't seen the trailer, so
it's just so dumb. It's like, why? How many of these things? Like, they're gonna discover pizza, and they're just gonna discover rock music, and they're gonna have to drive a car.
They're gonna
car
discover rock
something.
Music, like in back.
Wait, how large are they? Are they like human size?
No, they're tiny.
But a pizza would be way too much food for a Smurf.
Yeah, that's where the joke comes. They're trying to pick it up, and then they're like, oh, this is delicious. At some point, someone's going to open a pizza box and see a Smurf with a huge distended belly who burps inside it.
Sure.
I guarantee you. I guarantee you that's going to happen. And there's going to be a scene where they learn about modern music and they dance to it. Because every cute character in a movie loves rock and roll as soon as they hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always the shittiest rock and roll that time period can
There'll
produce.
Be some kind of... sunglasses on them something. Maybe a backwards ball cap.
Again, Ziggy would have done all these things.
You're rolling your eyes about that, but I remember a little scene in Gremlins 2 where Gizmo dances to a pop song.
Yeah, no, Gizmo likes those too. That's the hacky part of Gremlins.
All right. So,
but I also remember part in Gremlins 2 where they do a Busby Berkeley-inspired musical number.
Sure.
Where's
but there's that,
that
other
that
part. There's
Randall.
That other
Tony Randall sings start New York, New York.
Hey, in Gremlins 2, that's the one with the
that's the one with the new
the
badge.
babe.
Yeah, the gremlin.
The
who,
hot
the
gremlin
end,
chick with
lives
the boobs.
And Robert Picardo and she fall in love.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Apparently she's redeemable.
It
the
is there
love.
It is a movie like you were talking about those sexy duck women that you were talking about just then that you want to give a treasure bath to.
Yeah. Like the chick in Howard the Duck in the opening scene where he's being sucked through the walls. And I'm like, holy crap, that's a naked duck.
Like at the end of the movie, he is like okay with the idea of having sex with a 2-foot-tall monster that has just a head full of hair, red lips, and I guess boobs, no other female characteristics as far as we know.
Well, we
it's
don't
like the
know.
End of some Like It Hot, Elliot. It's exactly...
Except at the end of Some Like It Hot, they're both human beings. Well, that's
Whatever.
Why Some Like It Hot is not a funny movie anymore.
Yeah. But, she has, like,
idea,
large, grasping hands.
The very idea that
hands.
Two men would be in love is no longer a laughable proposition. She does have large, grasping hands.
I mean, I'm not going to say that, like, she'd be top of my list, like, top five or nothing, but...
Okay, well, let's move on, and quickly let's...
Gremlins 2 is a great movie, by the way.
I agree. Quickly, let's talk to Elliot
I've never had sex with a gremlin, by the way.
You are missing out.
Let's talk to Elliot a little bit about...
Comic-Con. You
Comic-Con.
Mean Comic-Con International?
Yes,
in San Diego?
Well,
comic book's brightest stars came out to shine at San Diego Comic-Con International. We had... people in costumes and stuff and all sorts of things. I went to do a lot of stuff.
Descriptive.
It was
Elliot brought me back a Sheena button. Speaking of the movie Sheena.
Yep. There, I had never been to the San Diego Comic-Con before. I went as a bachelor party weekend, which was a lot of fun,
mm-hmm.
and with a couple people.
Stuart and I were would have been able to go, by the way.
If we were invited?
Yeah.
Well, I know that's not true about Dan McCoy.
We didn't want to put the money in. That's all.
Wait, I was invited?
I don't want you to feel bad about it. That Elliot went without us. Anyway, go on.
Anyway, only groomsmen were invited. That's why you weren't invited.
Oh, okay.
But
I'm sure that you could have gone to Comic-Con.
Yeah, I mean, if I hadn't been in a haze of alcohol and
regret
and sadness, I probably would have realized that there's this comic book convention that all these fellows are going to.
But the thing is, I didn't see a lot of the movie stuff at Comic-Con. They had a lot of big announcements about, like, who's going to be in the Avengers and the Green Lantern stuff and Tron and the Tron Legacy. And I didn't see that much of that. I was really focused on a lot of the comic book things. But I did go to a panel featuring star 80s and 90s poster painter Drew Struzan, who you may know as the man behind the Back to the Future and Indiana Jones and the Thing posters, among other things. And they showed 20 minutes of a documentary that these guys are funding. The guys who are making the documentary are also funding it themselves as a passion project. That's a documentary about Drew Struzan, and he tells the story in it about painting the poster for The Thing, where they called him up apparently and they said, "Oh, you know that 50s movie, The Thing? Well, we're going to remake it." And he goes, "Oh, that's great." And they go, "Okay, well, we need a poster for it." And that's all the information that they gave him. So the reason you can't – and it's an amazing poster. It's really good. But the reason that there's no details of anything in the poster is because he had no idea who was in the movie, what the movie was going to be about, you know, any scenes from it. But that was exciting to see him. I also went to a panel featuring The Room star, director, producer – writer Tommy Wiseau, who is exactly what you would want him to be, a crazy nut job, who talks in a nearly incomprehensible accent and refuses to give any information about himself. He's the star of a short movie called The House That Drips Blood on Alex that was written and produced and directed by a sketch comedy team, and it was a fine short sketch comedy piece. Like, there were some okay jokes in it, some jokes that didn't fall so well. Nothing special, but Tommy Wiseau then managed to completely take control of the panel, which was him, the other people were in the movie, the sketch comedy group, and Joey Greco, the former host of Cheaters, who is also in the sketch comedy group. He was the moderator. And Tommy Wiseau just took control of the panel and didn't let go.
Rightfully so.
Rightfully so. Everyone was there to see him. It was a really rowdy audience, really loud, constantly cheering everything he said. Tommy Wiseau got so many applause breaks. And I don't think he ever – and he was like, "Hey, these people like me. I better do silly things." But I don't think he ever realized, like, these people are laughing at me. I am a freak to them, which made me feel kind of bad. But there was a long question-answer period. Someone would say, "When you were making The Room, what were you thinking about?" And he would say, "Are you asking me? Is this question for me? Is this for anyone?" Like,
he's French all the time.
I can't do that. His accent is – I can't do it.
Yeah, but it's like a weird Eastern European thing.
But he would always make everyone address him first to make sure that he knew it was the question was for him. Someone came and said, "Mr. Wiseau," and he goes, "Don't call me Mr. Wiseau. Call me Tommy or Wiseau." Someone asked him where he was from, and his answer was, "No, move on, next question." Every answer he ended with, "Move on, next question." And the audience would applaud because he was being so rude. Someone asked him if there would be a sequel to The Room, and he said, "Well, you know, in America, anything is possible. USA!" And everyone was chanting USA. That chant returned over and over again. At one point, someone asked him, "What do you eat for breakfast? Like, what's a Tommy Wiseau breakfast?" And he said, "I'm sorry, say again? What do you eat for breakfast?" "I don't." And the guy actually had to say to him, "You get up in the morning, you have something to eat, what do you eat?" And he said, "To a personal question, move on, next question." He would not say what he eats for breakfast. Other things that I learned, he plans, The Room will appear on Blu-ray and in 3D. Blu-ray will appear either before December or after January. He is still looking for a publisher for his...
So wait.
He's still...
So not in December or January.
No. I guess he has Christmas plans. he's still looking for a publisher for his novel version of The Room, which is over 600 pages, according to him. He was asked to recite a Shakespeare sonnet. This is something he does at public appearances. And he asked Joey Greco, is it okay? Do you give permission? And Joey Greco said, why don't we end the panel with a sonnet? Which makes sense. It's a good way to end it. And Tommy Wiseau goes, actually, I say I do give permission. I will do it. And he did it. Then he sang, someone asked him to sing Happy Birthday, which he doesn't really know the words to. So he had everyone who said it was their birthday line up on the front of the room, asked their names, sang Happy Birthday, and then said, you go over in that corner. Now I give you T-shirts. And he was throwing T-shirts at them, all while saying, I don't mean to steal the show. I'm not stealing the panel, while throwing T-shirts over his shoulder at these people. It was great. He gave an aspiring artist the wisdom that she said, what do you say to other people who want to make movie their own movies? And he says, well, you got to give 20% to get 100%. You go 20, then 40, then 60, then 80, then 100, but you can't do just 20%. Has to be 100%. That was his advice. I'm trying to think what other amazing, crazy things he said. He was ridiculous. He wore sunglasses the entire time, even though it was 9 o'clock at night indoors.
Did he ever do that weird laugh he does throughout the room?
Oh, yes, he did. A lot of that, and ha-ha-ha-ha-ha. It was a beautiful night, and he was crazy. You know, everything about him was weird. Those were the big, I think, flop-related highlights of the weekend.
Okay.
I didn't see any, like, I didn't get to see, the only celebrities I really saw were the kind of lower-level ones that were signing at booths. I saw Malcolm McDowell, who looks very old. I saw John Saxon, who looks extremely old. And Brent Spiner, who was doing everything he could to get people to pay attention to him. Michael Dorn was signing at a table, and Brent Spiner walked up and went, hey, Worf! Hey, Worf! I'm a big fan! Hey, Worf!
Wow.
You know, it felt very comic book convention-y. But overall, the convention is such a big thing. It's kind of sad because you have the whole convention hall. One half of it is movies and toys and video games, and the other half is comic books. And you walk in on the movies and toys and video games side, and it's so crowded. It's super crowded. And the closer you get to the comic book section, the more the crowds thin out. Until by the time you get to the comic book section, you can walk around freely, take your time. Like, there's just not as many people there. You know, everyone wants to see, you know, all the latest news about the Clash of the Titans DVD release, but you know, or
what J.J. Abrams has up his sleeve.
Exactly. I did sit through one panel I didn't originally plan to. In order to see the Venture Brothers panel without waiting online, I went ahead of time to the panel before it, which was for the TV show Leverage. And I never realized there were so many diehard Leverage fans. Apparently, they love Timothy Hutton and all the stars of Leverage. And I watched 15 minutes of a new episode of Leverage that they screened, and I gotta say, that show is ridiculous. It's about
ridiculously good.
It's, well, it was fun in the this is stupid way.
No, it's a dumb show. I actually watch it. You know, it comes on during the summers. It's fun.
It was very
fun.
It's
not part of a religious observance of any kind. Okay. I mean, it's not, you know, I have it on my DVR.
But it was
also a very dopey show.
But that's the other thing about Comic-Con, is you're constantly bumping into groups of people who are rabidly in love with something you have never heard of or know nothing about. And they know every detail about this thing. They run their lives by it. They love it. They can't wait to see more. And you know nothing about it. So like the show Leverage, all I knew were the print ads, which showed a giant tied up on the ground while Timothy Hutton kind of smirked at the camera. So I assumed it was about guys who fight giants. But these people, they know all the episode titles. They know the characters. They can't wait to see what's going to happen. They really want to know when the Leverage role-playing game was coming out. And Will Wheaton, who was on the panel, said he was very excited about that, too.
You know, oh, man, that's awesome.
Well,
I wish I had gone to that.
It was. I had so much fun at this panel for a show I don't watch.
Well, we need to wrap it up because the computer can only handle so much before it crashes. Maybe we'll tease out some more Comic-Con stories in the future. But
sure.
For now,
I didn't even talk about all the slutty costumes.
Oh, man. We'll talk about that.
We will talk about that later. But for now, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I think I'm Elliot Kalin.
Good night.
Is that the start of his memoir?
Memoir.
It's called Memoirs of a Geisha.
Memoirs of an Invisible Moi.
Of a Geisha?
Yep.
That's a gay geisha.
Yes.
Right?
Yep. I get it.
That's exactly what that is.
Get it? Oh, man.
I just said I got it.
I need to power up. Do you have any beer?